if you're working with couples, it's really pretty easy to understand 99% of the angry responses you see in your session. They're all about experiences of abandonment and rejection. And the one I see that couples really don't understand is that people who don't have an attachment frame don't understand how being shut out by an attachment figure triggers rage in the other person.
Dr. Sue Johnson really put a fine point on it. Rejection is the match that lights so many fires. You see, when a client grows up with a negative attachment experience, it can make for some pretty volatile relationships. Dr. Dan Siegel breaks down the three main systems responsible for how we feel anger, including the important role of attachment, and he reveals the one intense desire that lies beneath so much of our anger.
Anger and hostility are powerful ways of seeing a person be consumed by the activation of the fight system in the brain. So if you look at the brainstem, factors of fight, flight, freeze, and faint, this is a person who, for whatever reasons, has a super active fight system. When you add on top of the brainstem, in the hand model of the brain here, the palm being the brainstem, now you have the amygdala that gets involved in anger. You then can have this understanding from a neurological point of view that these two, the limbic amygdala and the brainstem functions of the fight response, can be super activated. And unfortunately, as we know, these circuits that are repeatedly activated strengthen the synaptic connections that make it more likely for them to be repeatedly activated. So that's the sad situation from a neurological point of view of this, not just kindling of getting something going, but of neuroplastic reinforcement. From a developmental point of view, when you think about the three major uncomfortable emotions of a baby, the three of them include anger, sadness, and fear. Right? So from, in our series, in the Norton series in interpersonal neurobiology, we have now over 50 textbooks that I've overseen the publication of. And one of those textbooks is Jacques Panksepp's Archaeology of Mind. And so in that book, you'll see how these subcortical circuits, like the ones we're talking about below the cortex in your fingers and hand model, these are going to be super, super activated, right? Now, from a social point of view, if you look at another book in our series by Steve Porges called The Polyvagal Theory, you can kind of see that when this system is relaxed, it's turning on what Steve beautifully calls the social engagement system. And when it's turned on, it pushes people away. It's the opposite of social, it's social disengagement, right? So with a super activated, sympathetically driven fight response, which hostility and anger can be, from a developmental point of view, we can see that it's one of the three major ones that are present. There's something that I find very useful called infantile rage, where you literally enter this altered state and are consumed with this rageful way of being. Anger and hostility doesn't always have to be infantile rage, but it certainly can be that. And when you think deeply about the social nature of human beings, including the social brain, but including the mind, which is not just brain activity, it's a relational self-organizing process as much as it is a fully embodied one, then a person's mind, as Alan Stroh in his studies in Minnesota with his colleagues, show patterns that you develop early in life, let's say from attachment experiences, induce from the environment responses that reinforce the very thing that you acquired as an adaptation when you were younger. So certainly some people can have temperaments that are just naturally irritable and angry. That can be a temperament thing. You can also have an attachment issue where you can have whether it's ambivalence or which is more about uncertainty or more likely avoidance, which is more about controlling this. You can have this way that you've adapted to insufficient connection as a child, fueled positively by temperament, that leads to your personality, which is you're a hostile, angry tendency person, right? So now we haven't used any diagnostic categories. And of course, someone can have agitated depression and can have anxiety. It can be having a psychosis. There's all sorts of things you can have. You can have post-traumatic stress states where fight was the best defense you could have. So there's every individual is different. And so we can't just make a broad statement, anger and hostility is this. But for me as a clinician, knowing all those varieties of developmental pathways that would bring you here, the approach I would take initially is the same, which is beneath the anger and hostility is a longing to belong in everybody. And so whether I'm walking down the park yesterday and there's some guy outraged and threatening people as he's walking down the park and there's some guardian of his like is holding him back, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, deep beneath that hostility that that man is presenting is a longing just to belong. And it's exactly the Porges and Panksepp view of looking at these deep mammalian circuits we have and how we really just want to connect with people. So as a therapist, that's the stance I take. That people can be angry and hostile and doing all this kind of stuff, assuming there's physical safety, which is obviously number one. They can be saying all sorts of things. But I try to look beyond the hostility and anger and an inner experience of a person. And, you know, in Dick Schwartz's view, they might say it's a protector part of the person that's protecting a fragile part. And Dick and I did a whole 2-day thing together, which was fun, and ultimately came to a view where Dick's notion in internal family systems work of self-leadership with a capital S is very much parallel to what we would see as this plane of possibility, actually. And so I would look beneath the person's anger and hostility and try to relate to that, and certainly not take it personally, unless there was something I was actually doing that was making this person angry, and try to interpret it as a defensive physiological response against vulnerability, against connection that could then be lost. And so people try to protect themselves. And I guess I'm always referring in my mind to, it's not so much about hostility, but it's about disconnection, to the studies of dismissing attachment, where when you put galvanic skin responses, monitors on their skin, when they say, oh, relationships don't matter, they don't influence you, they have big responses on their GSR. And you know what that means is their subcortical circuits still know that things matter.
That fear of disconnection is a deep, vulnerable feeling, and it can trigger an anger that's connected to a very early part of a client's life. But when these vulnerable feelings suddenly appear in a session, Dr. Sue Johnson sees an opportunity. Here Sue shows how she creates a new emotional experience when a couple's biggest fears are exposed.
We just did a great little YouTube, and it's on my website. I did it with Ed Tronick, and we showed a mother shutting a baby out, just going completely still, and the baby losing it and getting enraged and trying to turn away and then totally losing it. And then we showed the same thing happening in an adult couple. And lots of times what's happening in relationship distress is that one person's shutting down to avoid rejection experiences and feeling like they're failing and that they don't know how to please their partner. And as they do that, they shut the other person out and the other person becomes enraged. And I think it helps to understand that anger if you understand that in an attachment relationship, any response is better than none. So, because if I can't make you respond to me in any way at all, if I can't get you to respond, we have no relationship, no connection. So if I have to, I'm going to push you. I'm going to make you respond to me. And that's a lot of the anger we see in distressed relationships. And what we do is we put it in an attachment frame. We say, could you help me in the last few minutes? You've said you've called your partner an emotional cripple, right? You're pretty angry at him. So we start where people are, we reflect, and we describe, we don't blame, and they say yes. I say, and could you help me? I noticed that you got particularly angry when he turned away and looked out the window. And she says, I look for the trigger for the anger. I look for where it happens. I look for the body response. And the meaning is usually about attachment. So she says yes. And I say, so when he turns away from you, that's the place where you get mad. And she says, yes, because it's like I don't matter at all to him. This is what he does to me. He always does it to me. You know, when you're in full rage, everything is black and white. He always does it. It's never going to change. It's right, because you're fighting for something. So we assume that this is all about the longing for connection and the incredible pain that comes from emotional disconnection. So we say, yeah, so there's something very painful here that happens for you when he turns away. Very painful that happens for you. And we listen to her and we hear her. We don't blame her for our anger. We understand it in an attachment frame. And so what? And then we turn it into what happens in the relationship. We turn it into every emotion has an action tendency, a move, if you like, associated with it. And anger, I say something like, so you push him. You push him to respond. And she says, yes. If I don't do that, there's nothing. And I say, I understand. And then I turn to him and I say, and you see her pushing. And he says, that's right. She looks scary. I say, yeah. So you see her pushing and you step back and close the door. And he says, yes. And I say, and the more you step back and close the door, the more she pushes. So I've just put her anger into an interpersonal context, into a cycle that makes sense. And I help them look at the cycle. But if she stays in that anger and she can't get out of it, I need to go in and try to soothe her, try to help her make sense of the anger, reflect it. And then I'm really going for what triggers this anger, which is nearly always something about being shut out, about being abandoned, not important, about being rejected. And if you can help people go into those softer feelings, then everything moves to a different level. And the surface anger sort of dissipates. It's like it moves off to the side because they start to talk about the vulnerability underneath. And you start to move into that emotion and help them process that and stay with that. And then use that new emotional experience to change the signal to the partner. So emotion is the music of the dance with couples. You change the music. You say, so you get angry, but underneath, what you're really telling me is it hurts because you're so alone. You feel like he shuts you out and you're all alone and you don't even know if he cares. And she says, that's right. I say, could you tell him that? And sometimes people slip. She says, like she said. I say, could I just slow you down a minute? Could I just stop for a minute? I noticed that when you talk to me, you know, you're talking about feeling alone, but somehow you put your armor on and pick up your weapon when you turn to him. And that's very EFT. We use images. We want people to stay engaged in the emotional experience. And she says, yes, she laughs. I say, good. It's easier to tell him you're angry than to tell him how lonely you feel. And she says, yes. But then she does it. She turns and says, okay. I am angry all the time. And it's because I feel so alone. And I don't know where you've gone. And then she starts to cry. And as she starts to cry, suddenly she doesn't look like the enemy to her partner. Suddenly she doesn't look like the big, scary, angry person. And he actually starts to lean towards her, which is fascinating, right? He leans towards her to comfort her. And then we talk about the cycle. So we put anger in the interpersonal context, in the attachment context, and we reflect it, right? We make sense of it from an attachment point of view, and we assume that it's all about managing fear.
Managing that fear, as Sue said, is really what sits at the core of so many angry relationships. Here's Dr. Ron Siegel and Dr. Joan Borisenko with two additional skills that can help with this kind of attachment work.
The tricky thing is in couples relationships, sometimes when levels of anger become pretty intense, it is useful to have a little bit of a time out for both people's physiology to settle a little bit, for both people's frontal lobes to come online, for both people to have some recollection that, oh yeah, this is also my beloved, not just the big problem at the moment. But oftentimes if one member of the couple will make the move to say, I just can't talk to you right now, you know, I don't want to talk to you, that becomes the shutting out and the attachment relationship, which of course escalates the hurt and the anger and the fear on the other one's part. So a critical part of handling that well is, I think, in the couple's relationship, is to be able to say, I need 20 minutes and I want to come back and connect with you, but I'm not going to be able to do it usefully. How about if we come back in 20 minutes and talk about it? Would that be okay with you? And then do it. And then the question is, how does one work with this oneself? And I'm a fan of mindfulness practice, just sitting and being with the angry feeling it physiologically, feeling what the breath is doing, and noticing the thoughts coming, but allowing thoughts to come and go and staying back in the body. And of course, there's also loving kindness practices, self-compassion practices, that can help also, but to do them not to get rid of the anger so much as to just take care of ourselves so that we can be more held, so that we can have a little bit more wise self online for when we come back to the conversation.
It really helps to have rules of engagement. All the way back when I was in training as a psychologist, one of my supervisors had a worksheet, and on it were rules of engagement. And the idea was that we would sit with a couple and we would say, okay, what is it that most, not only, in other words, not what is it that makes you angry, but when you are angry, what makes you angrier in terms of how your partner relates to you? And they would generate things like somebody could say, as soon as he begins to shout, I really lose it. And so the idea for a rule of engagement might be, okay, it's physiological once you're angry to raise your voice. Everybody does that. It's not that one means it. But if it's very upsetting to one person, can there be a rule of engagement where the partner might say, we're angry, we're both shouting, it makes it harder for me to hear you. Can we take a breath and just lower our voices? That might be a rule of engagement for one couple. Obviously, a rule of engagement for everybody needs to be that there will be no physical, no physical violence associated with it, because that's a whole other thing, as we know. For some people, it's staying engaged and not going silent or not walking out. Or if you call me, there's no hanging up allowed. No disappearing, because for some people, of course, that really makes them furious. It makes them so very vulnerable. So I think the rules of engagement are important to work with.
These skills can help couples to keep their fingers off each other's anger triggers, and they can also promote a more empathic approach to each other's feelings. In the next video, we'll learn about the one change to your opening session that can immediately diffuse a client's anger. I'll see you there.